All right, welcome back, everybody. Another week of talk openly. Just amazing. The time goes so fast, and it's really a pleasure to be able to be with you all as the march of time continues.
Yeah. There are all these things that sort of mark that passage of time, and this is definitely one of them for me. Sometimes it just feels like it's like a blip, 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 like these, like the weeks go by so fast.
It's kind of amazing. It's really, I think if we could take each one of these moments as just a reminder of our limited time on this planet, not in a macabre way, but like, hey, let's do this. We've got this time here. Let's really engage. So it's inspiring to me sometimes. Sometimes it's
That's a
scary.
good way to look at it, Jen.
Other times it's terrifying. But right now I'm feeling inspired.
I'm just happy to I'm happy to be here and happy to see you laughing and smiling and just curious how's things going?
Well, I'm good. Just so folks know, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about Sangha, and the role that Sangha plays in our path and whatnot. But we'll get to that in a little bit. I'm okay. Actually, I feel like I'm doing pretty well. The time change certainly has brought some literal and figurative light into my life. I feel like this change really helps my mood. But yeah, it's funny. This morning I was gonna try and wake up at like 4:45. I was like, let's just see like what's gonna happen. Maybe I
Still
can
not
make
light
it
at
happen.
4:45.
No. And I set my alarm for 4:45 and I got up at 6. So yeah, I did not get my meditation done this morning, had to do it later. But otherwise life is okay. Life is good. I feel actually quite blessed with the work that I do. I'm just constantly reminded, like, I have so many opportunities every day to like remind people of our, bodhisattva or our Buddha nature, which is just really exciting.
What
I
do you
work with,
mean? You about reminding other people of their Buddha nature, or reminding yourself of their Buddha nature and yours?
I would say all of the
All of
above.
the above.
I'm really lucky. I get to do support groups with people who are in inpatient psych, and then I also do kind of one-on-ones with people who have just discharged from the psych hospital. And I just like I love everyone that I work with. Like it's really hard not to just kind of like just fall in love with people where it's like, oh man, like people go through such extreme circumstances and yet still show altruism, like still show the willingness to engage with life and to show kindness to other people. And so sometimes I'm just like, I recognize how like spoiled I am.
All right, totally.
Where I'm like, oh my gosh, the things that I get mad at, are just so trivial, compared to what some people have been through, and yet still are able to show people kindness. So, and not all the time. I'm not saying that, people are perfect angels, but I'm just really struck, often, daily, by people's ability to care for others. So
Yeah.
it's great. It's great.
That's beautiful. I'm glad that you brought that up. I've been reflecting a little bit on this lately. I've been noticing that there is this tendency on my end actually to judge in a way people who appear to have less favorable circumstances in life, like not judge them like, oh, they're a bad person or anything, but just sort of this judgment of like, oh, poor them, and there's like this pity or something to that end. And it's inappropriate. It's actually it's not true in many cases. I don't know. I have no idea what that person is experiencing. And the fact of the matter is that it's more likely that people with less fortunate life circumstances are actually closer to their Buddha nature, right? Than and certainly are displaying, generally speaking, better qualities than those who have more fortunate situations, right? Certainly, at least materially speaking, in the United States, you know, the people who have a lot of resources and a lot of material goods, oftentimes they're pretty far removed from their Buddha nature.
Yeah, for sure. What's that? There's a Bible verse, right? That I always was so intrigued by that verse. It was like, it's easier for a camel to walk through the head of a needle, or
The eye of the
the
needle.
needle, than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven.
That's right.
It's just such a good reminder, and I need to see, like, okay, where in my life do I have so much richness and wealth that can get me caught? It does. I get caught on it sometimes. So being able to be generous with my time and resources,
You know what's funny? You know what's funny about that Bible quote is I believe that some of the prosperity Christians, you've heard of them, they said, well, actually, we don't think that Jesus was talking about the literal eye of a needle. It's just that there was a gate to Jerusalem that was pretty small, and it was hard to get the camel through, but the camel could get through it, and it was called the eye of the needle is what they called the gate. And I'm just like, you missed the point.
Exactly. Aren't we so good at coming up with excuses for ourselves? Like, we are just the best at
Yeah,
it.
absolutely.
Well, how are you doing, Daniel? What's up with you and your world?
I'm good. I'm feeling pretty good. Now, I was kind of blown away. I was shaking my head when you were talking about the time change because I was like, yeah, it's brutal, right? And you're like, no, it's the best thing. I have light and I'm happy. Yay. I surprisingly, I do have a decent amount of energy, even though the time shift is pretty hard. I don't get I there's not an opportunity for me to sleep past the 4:15 alarm. And so it was feeling like 3:15,
It's
you
brutal.
know, which was pretty hard, but I was whatever, it was all good. You know, it's interesting. I had an experience today. My meditation practice, I'm really pretty pleased with it. And I was noticing this morning, I was like, oh yeah, like I sat to meditate and I was just like, I'm so like tired and dreamy. And I just, you know, and I was doing the practice, I was coming back, right? And then, oh, dreaming, going off. And then, so then I was watching that and I was like, okay, that's fine. Just watch the dreamy. Like, it's nothing wrong with it. It's just look at it. But then my intention was after the sit to very, very, very carefully pick up this state of mind that I had cultivated, right? A lot of times I do just get up from the cushion and go about my day, right? But the advice is to try to carry it through, right? And I was like very mindfully trying to carry this sort of this looking into the dreaminess, if you will, this distracted dreaminess. And it was really neat, actually, as I carried it out, I noticed like, oh, right, like it continues. And I was watching sort of like a waking dream, you know, as they kind of kept happening throughout the day, and then bringing myself back. And it was really a wonderful practice. And then it all culminated with I came to meditation practice at the temple. It was a group meditation practice. And at the very last sit, it was really great. I had such clear, it was so clear and so still and so not dreamy and so not distracted. So I got to start the day with this like, ooh, I'm having a hell of a time staying with it, right? And then end the day with this very present, very clear sort of feeling. It was neat to examine it.
You experienced a whole spectrum.
That's right.
Yeah, nice. That's fun. That's
Super
fun
cool.
to look at. Yeah, and I would like to do that more throughout the day. The kind of like checking in type, where you're just like, oh yeah, we're here, we're here. Time to pay attention. Yeah, that can be so helpful. Just that really kind of quick, like almost just like snap out of it a little bit,
Yeah, or snap
or
into
snap into it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something I would like to work on more. Yeah, how do you notice, like, is there anything that helps you cue into that, or like how do you do that kind of snapping into it?
I think it's just the habit pattern. I used to have like a bell or like a random bell or a random something that would pop up on my phone to remind me like, hey, check in. And that was really helpful when I needed that. But now I think it's not, I don't think it's like a trick or anything particularly helpful. I think it's just from doing it and regularly, consistently doing it. The mind, as if I can bring that intention, like I was saying, if I can not view meditation, the seated formal meditation, as anything different, then it kind of just bleeds out into the day. And then there is, at some point in the day, I'm just have what you just described, where I'm like, oh, I notice I'm doing this, and then bring it back, right? Yeah, it's just training the mind. That's what we're doing here, right?
Creating different habit patterns.
That's right. Yeah, and so this mindful habit pattern, it's like it's pretty bright light that's on. I'm not saying all the time, but it's on. Sometimes I wish it weren't so on, but no, generally speaking, I find it incredibly helpful, challenging at times because it you get to see all the stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I guess so. The times that I can kind of catch myself is when I'm a little bit in an in between,
Yeah.
like I'm going in between different places or appointments, and what's great is that where I work has a lot of hallways and like long hallways. And so often what I do is I just really like try and pay attention for the whole kind of path down the hallway. And like, notice my feet, notice the sound, if there's people around me, or if there's not people around me, and that's really interesting. I think that's kind of a good cue for me is like, transition, which is,
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, is that there can be a whole variety of cues. Like I was saying, a random bell on your phone, or just environmental cues, like you're saying, the hallway. I also, one thing that I do find really helpful is when I feel the presence of very, very, very strong sort of emotions. I find that really, that's a good cue. That's actually like a really helpful time to take.
Yes, it is for sure. That's like
Positive or negative, either one.
great when you're like, oh, this is an opportunity.
That's right.
That kind of
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's right.
nice.
Oh, and eating.
Eating.
Eating is a good one. Eating. So I've been working on being more mindful with my eating. And I one thing like that's really cool about that, Jack, is this. So you can like kind of make a little offering, right? When you do when you eat your food. And so it's neat because it sort of like keys you in a little bit. You're like, oh right, I'm gonna be mindful eating. I'm not just gonna be shoving this food down my throat, right? And then if you view it as an offering, what's kind of cool about that is that you really, because you want to experience all of the goodness of it, right? So that can be the offering. Well, lo and behold, there you are experiencing this like eating in a very mindful way. And it's so different. It's so different than just shoveling food down my gullet.
I love that. And I feel like too with the offering, it's a little bit like if I can think of it this way, I'm a little bit less possessive of it. Like
Oh
food, I'm like, this is mine.
yeah,
Like
exactly.
I don't even let like my partner touch my plate. Like I get annoyed if he like, tries something off my plate. It's like, this is my food. So that can be a really good practice for like just narrowing down that my selfishness a little bit, being like, okay, I can at least give this to the Buddha and he's gonna let me eat it, but
Right.
it's not really mine.
Yeah. So many things. It's constant. Actually, if you think about it, right? I saw a good quote that I'll share when we get start talking about Sangha that is directly related to this,
Interesting. Okay. A little teaser.
Little teasers. Yeah, keep listening because we got a good quote coming up.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Well, it's good to to hear about your training. And I so admire you because I know that there's certain elements of your day-to-day life that are not necessarily like easy right now. So it just sounds like you're really staying the course and like taking every opportunity you can to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Jack, what's changed actually, what I think is really cool that is that I really like I really want to meditate, you know? Like I really, really want to do it. It's not this like there's no shoulding. There's not a thing on my checklist. It's nothing like that. It's really truly just this deep desire where I'm like, no, I want to. I really want to, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's great. Cultivating the desire to meditate is huge. And to not just have it be a task, to really see like, no, they're not just benefits, for like kind of, oh, I can think clearer or, and those are very important ones too. Like I can think clearer, I can communicate better, but they're like, we have this momentous, opportunity to steer our life in a direction towards like genuine Buddhahood. And the only way we're going to do it is if we train our mind. And so like if we can really just allow our minds to marinate in that, like you're right, then we're just going to be like, I want to meditate as much as I can.
Yeah. You know what? I think I credit that switch though, because I did have to, I feel from, you know, I'm not suggesting that this is some kind of a permanent thing for me, but I did have to view it as a task or a thing to do for a while, right? But what shifted for me recently was a very strong, ever since I gave that talk on right effort, part of which had to do with laziness, and part of laziness has to do with doubt or lack of like belief in your ability to do this. That has been present for years for me, right? And it wasn't until like that giving that talk, preparing for it, and then like the after effect where it just sort of still sorts like it turns on the light sort of that and discussions with Lama as well, Darshan with him, that were really helpful for building confidence where I was like, no, I can do this. Right. And as a result of that, like, it's not so much like this sort of like fake it till you make it thing. I'm like, no, I'm doing it. I'm actually doing it.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. That's such an important turn.
Yeah, it is. It is. I agree. I agree. So, yeah. And if I can do it with my high level of self-loathing, doubt, cynicism, and all of that, I promise anybody else can do it.
And you know what's interesting? So, I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I was on a Zoom call with Lama, and he had mentioned something about how like Westerners do tend to have this kind of like self-hatred and just like lack of confidence in the Dharma and stuff, and we focus on these kind of like psychological bases of our suffering and whatnot. And I was thinking about how like really since I've been going to Lion's Roar, my self-hatred has just like dropped off. Like and I still like my meditation practice is nowhere where I would ideally like it to be. But I don't hate myself for that. Like I'm not mad at myself, right? I'm just kind of like, okay, that's kind of where it's at right now. Like it's just there and I'm doing what I can, right? And so that's such a huge difference from what it was like 6, 7 years ago before I came to Lion's Roar. So
Isn't that beautiful? Like
it is.
I talk about Buddha nature where you're like, no, you can clear the dust off of it and it can shine,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. For sure.
And when it shines, it does, it's not self-contempt, it's not self-loathing, it's none of that. There's a lot of love for yourself and everything else.
Right. And how amazing, like Lama says sometimes, Buddha nature is like inherent to our beings, and yet at the same time, we don't own it. Like it's not something that is ours, like how I think with my food, right? Where it's like it's mine. And that's also really fun to see where it's like, I can notice these different qualities that are being kind of like polished within me with the Dharma and meditation. And yet it's not something that I can claim as like, I did this. You
No.
know, it's like all of this coming together to help me along the path. And I mean, we're going to be talking about this with
Yes,
Sandra.
exactly.
Yeah, so but yeah, good stuff. I'm so happy to hear that, friend.
Mind training is working. Shall we do some Lojong slogan mind training?
Let's do it. I'm
All right.
excited.
Let me share my screen here. There we go. You can see it?
I can see it.
All right, I'm going to push the magic button. Oh,
Number 10.
good.
Okay. So this is a Tom Lin based Lojong slogan. It's number 10. Begin the sequence of exchange with yourself. So it says point two consists of nine instru oh, sorry. We're gonna dive in a little bit farther in. So number one, cultivating absolute bodhicitta, which consists of five instructions, and number two, cultivating relative bodhicitta, which consists of four instructions. I got a little mixed up here, so I apologize. But anyway, it says begin the sequence of exchange with yourself belongs to the second division, cultivating relative bodhicitta. Cool. Okay. So in the Way of the Bodhisattva, translated by Padmakara Translation Group. So Way of the Bodhisattva is Shantideva, right?
Yeah.
Okay. My brain isn't fully
What
functioning
about you
today,
guys? You
so
got it.
yeah. Those desiring speedily to be a refuge for themselves and others should make the interchange of I and other and thus embrace a sacred mystery. Ooh, I like it.
I like it too. What are they talking about with beginning the sequence of exchange with yourself?
Well, as far as I know, so this is about Tonglen, right? And so Tonglen is a practice, a visualization practice, where we imagine bringing in the suffering of others, and transforming that suffering through bodhicitta, and then sending back all of the everything they need within this life. And all the stages of the path, like everything you need along the path. And so what this Lojong slogan is saying is that that practice of Lojong or of Tonglen, we first need to start by visualizing doing that for ourselves before moving on to a loved one, a stranger, and an enemy. So we start first with ourselves. What's that like for you, Daniel, when you do that, when you start Tonglen with yourself?
Yeah, so my meditation practice, as I mentioned last week, now starts with Tonglen practice to get to kind of prime the pump. And I kid you not, starting the sequence with myself really is an embrace with a sacred mystery. It is the oddest thing. It's a strange feeling where I'll notice actually all of us, like it's a very you can feel it in your body, right? Where there's a as soon as there's that exchange happening, the breathing in the dark, and the breathing out the light or the color, that whole exchange, there's this very physical feeling for me of like softening, right? My attitude towards myself, towards everything that I kind of view as me, it softens. And I remember that thing that you were just talking about, which is actually self-love, right? This where I don't, that's not my normal habituated sort of way of thinking about myself, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really quite beautiful, this encouragement to start with ourselves. And then once that's happened, it's really beautiful to watch that exact same, that all that sort of that goodness, that beautiful energy flowing towards other beings. Right, whether it's a single person or many people that you're visualizing, it really is it's so counter to our normal way of thinking, at least in this society, in this world.
Yeah.
That it's a breath of fresh air, and then there's this total softness, like I said, towards myself and towards others, and a dropping of the boundary between the two.
Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting because I've heard that it's much different in Western culture, this approach, than in, kind of traditional Buddhist settings, like a more Eastern kind of culture, where in Tibet or India, it's not necessarily, it's not thought of as like selfish to start with the self. It's just kind of like, well, that's who you're thinking about first. But here in the West, there's this kind of like paradox of like, we can't think of ourselves first. And yet we also have such like a individualistic, like selfish driven culture. It's very complicated and kind of confusing. And I'm sure I'm very much simplifying like the Indian and Tibetan approach as well. But that's just what I've heard. And so I've even heard someone say, I can't remember who said this, but that if it's hard for you to think of yourself first because you've been taught maybe like that that would be selfish, or you have a lot of self-hatred, that starting first with a loved one might in fact get you into the mindset of Tonglen that makes the rest of it kind of open up. But again, I can't remember who that's coming from, so take it with a grain of salt. But I have noticed a similar thing too, Daniel, where there's this gentleness that I feel towards myself. Where I can see like, oh yeah, okay, take a breath, like you're a flawed human being, and just like everyone else, you're trying to be happy. And that's there's like you said, that just real kind of gentle softness, where I can approach myself instead of feeling like that kind of self-hatred that we've been talking about, that just kind of frustration or annoyance with ourselves. So yeah, I think this is just such a great one, getting into the space of being able to exchange with others, first seeing ourselves as worthy of that as well.
Absolutely. I think so. Our friend Marie, who taught me Tonglen anyway, and does the monthly Tonglen practice for Lion's Roar, I remember saying, I think I've talked about it before, but I remember one time telling her, like, I feel like just starting with other people, I'm good. I don't really need anything. I'm okay. I'm fine. Right. And she was like, her eyes got all big, and she was like, that's a pretty good indicator that you should start with yourself. Like, and so, but the truth of the matter is that there is that thing that you're talking about, which is like, oh, right, I'm just flawed, and I'm the same as everybody else, right? Struggling and got all this stuff. That's the sort of the dark aspect of it. But what I find really interesting is that I somehow have habituated myself to turning off from receiving. And that's the part that's really magical to me. I'm more than willing to suck up all the dirt and, oh yeah, I'm a shitty human being and I got all
Yeah.
kinds of problems, right? Like that part seems easy to me. But what's really magical is when I have to send all the positive qualities, right? All of that merit, all that goodness to myself. Well, the thing is that because I know that I'm sending it to myself, I'm also that means I'm feeling the receiving of it at the exact same time, right? I'm sending
Yeah.
and receiving with myself. And it's weird because I it wasn't until I started doing Tonglen that I recognized that I was completely cut off from receiving. That I don't know if it's believing myself not worthy or if it was more like this, like I'm independent, I'm strong, I don't need anything from
Yeah, I'm
anybody.
good.
I'm good. Don't, yeah, you don't need to give me anything to keep it for yourself, right? And so somehow, like, recognizing that actually, no, that's not true. There is this sort of this opening up of awareness of interdependence, where it's not just about giving, 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 right? It's about exchange, right? Like, that's the nature of of energetic flow, giving, receiving, sending, right?
Yeah, no, it's exciting, I think, when we can see that. There's a little I feel happy when I see myself smile in Tonglen. And that's always a surprise too.
Right? Where you're like, oh, look, I'm visualizing me smiling, and that makes me happy.
Let's see this Tonka down here.
Okay. The tongue, it's hard. I can't show the whole thing. But
Oh,
these are
it's
some
really
messages
cool.
here.
Yeah, definitely check out this page. There's such great art. It's inspiring stuff.
Yeah, I want to be a Mahasiddha.
The Mahasiddhas are the kind of like wild yogis, right? Am I right?
Yeah, well, I think that they great cities, great powers, right? They have some what we might refer to as like magical powers, but I think that they're probably just super mundane powers.
Who knows? Maybe
Who
not.
knows? I don't. I'm not a Mahasiddha.
There might be some flying human-ish beings out there.
Well, Lama did give me some encouragement to become one. So
Very cool.
he said that things will change for me a lot once I become one.
Yeah, I
Didn't
bet.
say, he did not offer like some kind of a guarantee that I would, you know. He was just saying, keep working on it.
Yeah, totally. Well, and if I'm correct, and again, I have to say my brain is not fully functioning this evening, but if I'm correct, the Mahasiddhas are the ones that are kind of a little bit out there, right? Like they're the ones who confront kind of social norms, even within like the Sangha, things that might be good to disrupt a little bit, or just yeah, they're a little bit kind of out there. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, great. Well, I support you in that.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Let's all move towards that. Well, my friend, I'm so glad to be talking about Sangha
Yeah,
tonight.
thanks for being an important part of my sangha.
Yeah, seriously, yeah, same for you. Sangha is a topic that I feel like I neglect, honestly. When we do like kind of the refuge prayers, it's, I take refuge in the guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. And the first three are like, yeah, I'm pretty clearly doing those every day. Like I do a guru practice, I do prayers to the Buddha. I do mantras of the Buddha. I read Dharma. I do Dharma books every day. But Sangha is a little bit the one where I'm like, huh, I kind of forget that that's one of my refuge jewels, right? It's one of like of three. And in our tradition, it's like four with the guru. So that was really interesting to kind of look at that and be like, oh, okay. Maybe I need to be thinking a little bit more about Sangha. And so I'm extremely grateful that I have this opportunity to talk with you every Tuesday, because I think this is very much like, and I imagine that this is one of the reasons why Lama has me do this, is because, right, is because he wants me to stay engaged and really be involved with temple practice, even though I'm not there.
Physically,
Yeah, physically. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting to consider, that connection with Sangha.
I was reflecting on the fact. So Lama mentioned the other day, he said, well, guru is really part of the Buddha jewel, right? But then when I was thinking about it, because I'm doing the same thing, guru, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And I don't see much of it. Like, I see our teacher in the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the
Yeah,
Sangha jewel, right? Like,
totally.
all of them, and our Sangha. So, you know, I think maybe it'd be good to clarify a little bit about what Sangha means, right? So we use it kind of, I think the way we do it is a little bit of a colloquial usage of the term.
Sure, yeah.
I think historically, I think at least initially, Sangha meant like the people with high degree of realization, the bodhisattvas,
Right, right.
Buddhas, so on and so forth. And then it went on to be a term that was used for the monastic community, right? Oh, that's the Sangha. And then, you know, then there's like, oh no, but there's actually lay people who are meeting like us, right? And we, you know, we basically just say like, wherever there's a group of people practicing Buddha Dharma together, that's a Sangha, right? So
Yeah,
I think
different
that's,
terms, yeah.
yeah, and it's all appropriate. I think it's all fine. But it's interesting to me that the Sangha jewel is, for me, like so important, so critical, because I feel like I spent most of my years before Buddhism, before becoming a practitioner, taking refuge, was spent in isolation, separate, you know, disconnected, and all of that. And so it's been really a big shift for me has been engagement with the Sangha. That's been of such great value. So it's like almost inverted for me, where I'm like, oh man, the Sangha jewel is so precious to me,
Yeah.
right? Like, I'm just like, oh my God, I don't know what I would do without it, right? And
Yeah,
then from
totally.
there, I'm like, oh right, that's how I get my dharma, right? That's how I listen to the dharma, and then and get support and all of that. And then oh right, and that goes all the way back to Buddha, right? And then I'm, oh right, and the guru made this all possible for me.
Right. That's so interesting how we always have kind of these different perspectives. Which is great. I mean, that's another reason why Sangha is so important, is that we're going to see things from different perspectives that we, you know, might not have considered, which is all, it's both the benefit and the challenge of being in a community of people, especially one where we're trying to cultivate a very diverse and you know, connected group that's connected to our communities. There's gonna be like very differing opinions and perspectives. And so how do we deal with that? Like how do we work with that? And that's our practice, that's our training. So it's challenging to say the least.
Yeah, but Jack, that's the thing for me that is so freaking awesome
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
about Sangha, right? Is so having been a member of a religious institution, growing up in a fundamentalist religious institution, and witnessing many religious organizations, one of the things that happens is a great amount of sort of groupthink, and everyone sort of it's really important that everybody thinks the same thing, believes the same thing, you know, and
Right.
there's a sort of checking of each other's behavior and that to make sure that it's all in line, right? And there's actually, you know, like it's the opposite of diversity, right? They're going for
Right.
extreme conformity. And it was such a breath of fresh air to come in and be like, oh, these are all incredibly different people with incredible, like a huge diversity of occupations and backgrounds and beliefs and everything. But what they have in common is this ethical way of living and this desire to be of great benefit to themselves and others, right? In this fashion. And that's what makes it so gorgeous, is like there is a central theme, there is something that we all have common ground on. But past that, there's a whole lot of diversity.
Yeah, it is so cool. That there is that connecting principle of like, okay, we're here to do some good in the world. Here's our kind of like basic understanding. We don't want to harm ourselves and others, and let's see, you know, where to go from there. And I think that's really interesting because then on, you know, there's the other aspect of Sangha that's like the monastic Sangha where you know. They're really, really trying to follow, how the Buddha led his life, and so really kind of trying to remove those individualistic paths that maybe those of us in the lay sangha get to work within. But how important to have both, and of course, within the monastic community, there's individuals like that's, not at all that people become like drones or whatever. But just to see that there's these kind of like two ways within the sangha that are really important traditions to move forward. And are in fact, it's called the fourfold sangha, where it's like monks and nuns and lay people, men and women, and oh, just people. So maybe threefold sangha, but
Multiple.
multifold sangha, yes. And so I really like that about the tradition is that, monastics are really relying on the lay people to do their practice and vice versa. And I think that's something too that gets a little bit lost in the West is that this monastic tradition is also incredibly important to be maintaining because we really, really rely on one another even if we don't
Right.
necessarily see it too much in our everyday kind of practice at the temple.
I didn't see, I actually didn't understand what the monastic stuff was all about, right? But it turns out that the reason it's so valuable is because that's how we get this unbroken lineage, right? All the way from Buddha 2,500 years ago. It was by, I mean, the very first thing that he does is to establish the Vinaya, right? Or to the order that create the monks and then create all the rules, right? The about ethic or behavior, how they work with each other and stuff like that. And it's like that purity and that discipline and all of that is what allows the Dharma to continue to persist. Because if it was up to lay people alone, it would get corrupted and likely disappear, right?
Well, and also we're just that and like there's not enough time in the day.
Right.
Like we've got to work. We have families. So there's just not enough time to do the type of very disciplined practice that monastics are doing. And yet, the monastics really need us to be working, right? They need us to support them financially and with food, and also with our practice. Our practice is crucial, because we're bringing, our Dharma training into the work that we're doing. So we're helping, bring about the Shambhala, community that we're all seeking. So yeah, it's very like intertwined work together, which is exciting for me because I, when I first kind of started out and was like really kind of getting like diving in deep and recognizing that this was my path, I had that belief that like, okay, if I'm gonna do serious practice, then I have maybe I have to like go the monastic route, Like I really was thinking about that, but it turns out that everyone really has an important role, whether that is monastic or layperson.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And when, when we get the when Shambhala is realized, that will be the Sangha, right? All of it. So I lied earlier, Jack.
What did you lie about?
Lied about the quote.
it not very good? It's not a good quote.
No, it was a great quote. I just didn't write it down.
Oh,
No, but I but no, look, check it out. So this is it was an article that it was by Thich Nhat Hanh. And I thought it was quite beautiful. So he was saying, basically what we've been talking about, that the Sangha, right, arhats, bodhisattvas, monastic people, lay people, right? But then he was talking about Sangha, the support aspect of Sangha. That's what a large part of why it's such an important jewel, right? Like why it's so critical to us is because of this supportive nature. And then and what he was saying was something quite profound, which was he said Everything is the Sangha, can be the path, just literally like the dirt that you're walking on, the wind and the trees. Every single moment is preaching Buddha Dharma at all times. And therefore, everything is supported. And there was something about that I just thought was so beautiful. But I do have a quote from it's not a Thich Nhat Hanh quote, but it's one that I was hoping that I'd share, hoping to share with
Oh,
you.
please, yeah.
So, let's see here. So this is a quote by Domong Yangthan, and it was in a book called The Union of Dzogchen and Mahamudra. When we speak of the Sangha, we speak of the Arya Sangha, which means the exalted Sangha. At the time of the Buddha, this referred to the arhats and bodhisattvas, the disciples who studied under him and achieved various levels of realization through their practice. But now, who is the Arya Sangha? It's all of us, all of the practitioners of the present time. The moment we take refuge, which is to begin on the path, we hold the title of Sangha. As such, you should understand that you are one of the three jewels. You shouldn't put the three jewels outside of yourselves. You should always think of yourselves as being one of the three jewels, and that includes your body, your speech, and your mind. And I was like, oh, whoa, right. So when I take refuge, right, when I do that, I do in fact think of the Sangha as outside of me,
Yeah, out
right?
there. Yeah.
Right.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Isn't it though?
I really appreciate that. It's again, it's very sweet, right? Because it's like similar to how Tonglen starting with yourself, where it's like we're saying no, we're including ourselves. We're not separate from this. We're not doing it from the outside or having it done, towards us, from the outside. We are involved. We are in fact doing this. That's
Why
beautiful.
does it, why is it so hard to understand that, Jack? That
I
seems every
know.
time that every single time that there's something that points that out to me, right? Somebody, something that points that out. I quite kind of I'm like surprised. I'm what
I
me?
know.
Who? Me? Wait. Just like we were talking about with the Tonglen. I'm like, whoa, me? I me
Totally.
send and receive, right? Me this jewel? No,
Yeah.
really?
Well, and there's that really, I think brings in for me this sense of responsibility to one another, right? Where it's like, because I'm not just having this done at me, I'm involved. That means that other people are relying on me as I'm relying on them. And so there's this way that I want to show up. I want, Lama talks about that metaphor of like, being on the mountain where you're kind of like you're chained in with one another, you're on this expedition, right? And if you're gonna get to the top of the mountain, you have to make sure that every single one of you is on point, right? And like you gotta be focused. And so there is this kind of like beautiful responsibility where it's like I really want to do my best, and not that that always happens, but it's inspiring to me.
It
Thank
is.
you for
So,
bringing that
yeah, the other, I like what you just the what you're referring to there. I've heard Lama also say something to the effect of there is no personal enlightenment. We all go together, right? Which is the same thing. And yeah, I think that's sort of what draws me and keeps me going. I heard somebody say the other day at a meeting or at a group meditation session, something like, well, we're all suffering, otherwise we wouldn't be here doing this, right? We are, that's the motivation. And I was like, whoa, wait a second, hang on, maybe that's like what brought me here. That is not what keeps me here. Right? There's deep heartfelt sense of appreciation for the community, right? Like for like, okay, so this, like all the benefit that I everything, all the beauty and just this gorgeous Dharma, right? Like being able to practice it, to learn it, to hear it, and all of that came through this particular way, this lineage, this teacher, this Sangha, right? And I'm like, man, I want to support that. I want to be a part of that. And I know it's goodness, right? Like, it's so clear. It's so clear, the goodness. I would be foolish to walk away just because I got a little bit of personal relief, right?
No, that's such a great point. And one thing that if like I want to really be reminded of that, like my role in this, is to think of, how the Dharma in Tibet was like almost destroyed, right? Like the Chinese government really wanted to rid the world of Tibetan Buddhism, and destroyed, many temples. I am so just deeply grateful that there were people who did everything that they could to bring that lineage now around the world, right? Like, in fact, it has expanded so much, right? There's so many people now who have access to Tibetan Buddhism, and that are behind the cause of, of Tibet. And so that really kind of shakes me sometimes if like I'm feeling a little bit kind of just, like not really grateful, right? Like I'm a little bit like, yeah, just kind of doing my practice. If I really remind myself, like, oh man, there was a moment where this could have been snuffed out. Like, we really have to, like, this lineage, we carry it on. Like, we are going to be carrying on our teacher's lineage when he dies, like his part of this. So yeah, there's a lot of beauty in that.
A lot of responsibility, and it's and when you exactly what you said is that there's so much gratitude for what had to happen in order for these teachings to arrive here for us, like way beyond. I mean, and that's the Sangha, right? That's the community, this network. It's almost like a mycelial, network that spans through time and space, right? And that has all these different hubs and these branches, and it's just mind-numbing to think about what's required to make it happen. And it does, like you said, it does instill a great sense of gratitude.
For
So,
sure.
with that gratitude, there is this sense of responsibility too, right? So, what can we do to support the Sangha? Because we all have different capabilities, different resources, different whatever to contribute. Like, what do you think are some of the key ways besides practicing diligently? I think that's the
Well, I think you kind of hinted at it, is that each one of us has our own kind of unique abilities, and bring it, right? Like that's what we should be bringing, is like, what skills do we have? Like, and part of it is our resources too, our time, our energy. If we have financial resources, we can bring that too. But I think the most part is like an open mind too. And an open mind, not just to others, but to ourselves, like an open mind to what am I capable of bringing? And I certainly would have never guessed that I would be doing a weekly, a weekly talk show, right? So there's all different ways that like we can discover things within ourselves, and especially if we're willing to kind of challenge ourselves a little bit, like, hey, I'm gonna show up and maybe, go to some meditation groups, and with time, maybe I'll even like lead one, like there's all these ways that we can get involved. Garden, right? Like sweeping. It's every single thing is important. And yeah, your all of our efforts are going to help. Yeah, and a temple practice is just like, there's so much, right? There's almost too many opportunities
It's
in temple
never ending.
practice,
There's
right?
so much going on. It's a small, but certainly here at the Lion's Roar Dharma Center, it's a small but mighty sangha, right? There's a lot going on all the time. And one of the things that I love, love, love about what our teacher is doing here is really making sure that we understand that our role is not limited to being just a little Dharma club where we all get together and we all feel good because we're with like-minded people and everyone's being nice to each other and eating food
Yeah.
together, right? That actually we have to be involved with the community as well. And because that's part of how we support and grow the Sangha, right? It's
Yeah.
not a proselytizing or anything like that. It's literally being of service, right? Whether it's through chaplaincy or whether it's through mental health initiatives or even just like handing out cookies to the neighbors, you name it. There's all kinds of different ways that we branch out into the non-Buddhist community, because it was actually, it was another Thich Nhat Hanh thing where he was talking about how what did he say? He said it was, he says the Sangha is made of non-Sangha elements.
Yep.
Right? And so integrating with our community, right? And like really trying to sort of have that Shambhala vision, right? Where we're really trying to work for the benefit of all beings. That's incredibly helpful.
That is, yeah. Well, I can't believe it, you know, that we're almost to the end of the hour because there's so much more to talk about here. And I'm wondering if next week we might want to dive in a little bit into where this might be hard, you know, where
Ooh, let's do it. Yes.
working with people, working with Sangha
Yes.
can be a little bit challenging. And so I'd love to talk about there's this great metaphor that folks at Shravasti Abbey use to describe Sangha and community is that it's a rock tumbler. So you're all these rocks in the rock tumbler, and you're just grinding up against each other. And the purpose of that, though, is that we're gonna get smooth. We're gonna get all of that roughness kind of sloughed off by our interactions with one another. And not all of them are hard and difficult, but we get to see ourselves by the ways that our relationships with others,
Yeah.
can maybe point out things that are frustrating to us. So,
Oh, I love it. Let's do it. Let's let
yeah.
how we how the Sangha jewel gets polished.
Yes. Beautiful. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for
You,
this lovely conversation. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for your it being my Sangha community. And to all those out there listening, we love you too. You're part of the Sangha.
Absolutely. Appreciate you all, especially you, Jack. Thank you so much. Bye
Daniel,
bye, everybody. Take
bye. See you
care.
next
See you
week.
next week. Yep.